Everything in life has a more sinister and darker side than what's perceived on the surface. Every piece of media that you consume has something lurking in the shadows of the person or the team who made it. Every movie, every song, every book that you've enjoyed, all has a dark past in some form. But out of all of those, it seems that video games have the capability to house some of the most dark and twisted parts of the creator's mind. From obvious inclusions like Silent Hill's PT, to the most light-hearted games such as Mario, we will pluck every strand of every creepy and twisted mystery these games have to offer. This is the dark side of gaming. YouTube is a magical place, isn't it? All over the world, people dream of becoming famous, but not everyone can simply pack a bag and move to a major city. Of those that do, only a small number are successful. It takes years for the right person to see your work, and only then do you begin to make an appearance in the public eye. But not anymore. YouTube gave ordinary people the ability to pick up their phone and start creating content. These days, it's difficult to think of something that isn't being done by at least 20 other people, but here, we're turning back the clock to 2015 and discussing a channel called McSkillet. It was created by Trevor Heitman, who was only 15 when he uploaded his first video. Despite his young age, he was able to amass almost 900,000 subscribers in just 3 short years without ever showing his face. Unfortunately, not all of YouTube's self-made millionaires have a happy ending. Okay, a lot of them don't. But here, we're going to focus on the tragic story of OG McSkillet and how he would ultimately take not only his own life, but the lives of an innocent mother and daughter. Those unfamiliar with his case may be thinking, okay, here we go again. But you'd be wrong. This story is quite different from the other YouTubers-turned-killer stories. Heitman grew up in San Diego with his sister and his parents. He was generally described as kind, quiet, and intelligent by those close to him, but not much is known about his early childhood. All signs pointed to a relatively normal home life, and there were no red flags to indicate an abusive upbringing. Trevor enjoyed playing basketball in his younger years, but at 15, he began spending more time online playing Counter-Strike Global Offensive. CS:GO is an objective-based multiplayer first-person shooter developed by Valve and Hidden Path Entertainment. Terrorists and counter-terrorists compete in various game modes to complete objectives, but overall, the gameplay itself is very similar to other shooters. However, there is one unique aspect that sets it apart. The weapon skins. They don't increase your stats or provide any real advantage. They exist purely to give the weapons different appearances. Even back in 2015, there were thousands to collect, with more coming out all the time. Most of them were common, but some were extremely rare and expensive. Compared to the major games like Call of Duty, CS:GO has a relatively small community, but these skins were the key to their and McSkillet's success. While YouTube wasn't exactly new 7 years ago, it was a far cry from what it is today. When Trevor went online in search of skin guides, there was virtually nothing available. If someone wanted that kind of information, they were forced to spend hours searching through various forums. Thus, OG McSkillet was born. His very first video was the top 10 most expensive skins in CS:GO, and people loved it. So, here we have a clever 15-year-old getting his first small taste of notoriety, and the pressure to keep improving is immense. He could only create so many list videos before fans expected more, and it wasn't long before he started recording trade-ups as well. This is a feature that allows players to exchange 10 skins of the same grade for a new one of the next highest tier. The item received is chosen at random from one of the collections used, and like his other videos, these two were a hit. In one of his later uploads, he explains how he progressed from only gaining sporadic subscribers to suddenly getting 20 a day, which turned to 50, then 100, all the way up to the point he was gaining over 1,000 every day. He hit 100,000 in only 3.5 months, which is not an easy feat to achieve. But to get beyond that point, Trevor would need to kick it up a notch. As McSkillet and the CSGO community continued to grow, so did the game. The easiest ways to get rare skins outside of trading with other players are loot crates, which vary in price depending on how rare the content. One could argue that that's a form of gambling, considering it's possible to spend real money yet still get worthless crap. But there is a worse form of gambling that we need to discuss. To understand the rise and fall of McSkillet, you must understand the gambling world created around the obsession with these skins. Because they're bought and sold on the Steam marketplace, they have real-world value. The only problem is if you sell one on Steam, you only receive credits, and most people prefer cash. When it comes to money, there will always be someone who finds a way around the system. In this case, a slew of gambling sites began popping up all over the place, essentially creating a black market beneath the name of an official esport. Basically, you purchase skins with real money and they become the currency. Then, you can either bet on an esport or play a game like roulette. In order to skirt the law, the winnings are also paid in skins, which must then be taken to a separate website that allows the utilization of PayPal in order to sell them for cash. When Trevor turned 16, he received sponsorships from two of these sites, CSGO Wild and CSGO Strong. But he stayed away from the ones that were destroying other people's careers. At first, most of the advertisements were simply an overlay on the screen. He didn't begin to show actual gambling in his videos until the end of 2016, but he would eventually show it more often as time passed without any backlash. In 2017, Trevor didn't need sponsorships from these websites anymore because he started his own, Skin Trade. That was his first, but it lasted less than a year, and there isn't much information available for it. He pretty quickly moved on to a case-opening site called CSGO Kingdom. Most YouTubers who did this kept their ownership of the sites a secret, but not McSkillet. He was open about it. This one is also greatly lacking in information, but it's said to have been profitable for the first few months before flailing out. This brings us to CSGO Magic, his third and final site. It was wildly successful. From April 2015 through December 2017, it's estimated that he made over $10 million, $4 million in the most recent year alone. That December, McSkillet uploaded a video of his new sports car, a black McLaren 650S. I think we can all agree he was doing well for himself. Don't forget, we're discussing the accomplishments of a teenager. Not only was he happy, successful, and popular, he cared about his health and was known to spend time at the local Crunch Fitness. No one could have possibly known that this was already the beginning of the end. Even Trevor was unaware that the video he posted on March 20, 2018 would be his last. It was just like all the others. There's nothing unique or special, but the growing controversy over gambling in video games was reaching its boiling point. Adults and children were spending thousands upon thousands of dollars and quite literally became addicted. This was far more serious than a few disgruntled parents, and on March 29th, something would finally be done about it. Valve updated the CSGO guidelines to specifically target the gambling sites. Players could still trade with one another, but only after a 7-day cooldown period. This alone was enough to end CSGO Magic, but to add insult to injury, McSkillet's personal inventory was also banned due to his link with gambling bots, considering he spent 3 years collecting $100,000 worth of skins. It would be a massive understatement to call this a setback. But did it have to be the end? A fan base of almost 900,000 subscribers could have been a nice starting point for something new, and he had enough money to fund almost any project he wished. For the first couple of months, he alluded to future projects, but whether he genuinely decided against them or his mind simply wouldn't allow it, he never posted another video. Trevor may have put "retired" on his Twitter bio, but it wasn't the last that we would see of him. Over the following months, his behavior would grow increasingly erratic to the point that he told his parents he was having a meltdown and confessed to driving 150 miles an hour in a 25 mile an hour speed zone in the wrong way. When asked what he would have done if stopped by the police, he replied, "Neither they nor their bullets can hurt me." This was on August 18th. His behavior only worsened over the next several days until Mary Russia, the family's neighbor, made an urgent call to 911 on the 23rd of August. That morning, Trevor was manic and screaming at his parents, even going so far as to threaten his mother. His delusions rose to new heights as he explained his ability to drive through other vehicles without taking damage. He only needed to drive fast enough in the wrong direction. This is an especially noteworthy detail when assessing Trevor's mental health, since CSGO has a feature called clipping, where one actually can travel through solid objects. This could easily be seen as evidence of his mind confusing real-world mechanics with the game he spent so much time playing. If that weren't enough, he also believed his sister was following him, but she wasn't at the family home that day. Mary, a board-certified psychiatrist, was deeply alarmed by Trevor's mental state. She took no chances when speaking with the emergency dispatcher. Her choice of words were very precise. She says, "There's an individual who is a danger to himself and to others. I believe he is suffering from a mental illness and should be detained on a 5150. California law permits adults who are experiencing a mental health crisis to be involuntarily hospitalized for a 72-hour evaluation. These exist primarily for helping those who pose a threat to themselves or to others, but the system failed the Heitman and the Pizarro families that day. Police arrived only 12 minutes after the urgent call, and their body cams recorded the entire interaction. They immediately noticed the father's vehicle pulled across the driveway. It was there as a last hope to prevent Trevor from leaving. As the Heitmans eagerly explained their situation, one of the officers asked, "Who bought the car for him?" And the answer stunned them all. When Kurt said his son made $4 million in 10 months, the officer joked. He said, "He's got to teach me his ways," and was rewarded with a round of soft laughter. Kurt's distress was painfully clear in his short response, and his attempt to laugh it off came out as a forced chuckle, eerily void of amusement. He was desperately trying to show them evidence conveying the situation's severity, but no one wanted to take him seriously. And what did Kurt get in return? "So what do you want us to do?" The officer was blunt. He seemed annoyed that Kurt had the audacity to complain about his millionaire son. You could almost hear his thoughts turning to daydreams of his own child becoming filthy rich. Though the request should have been abundantly clear by this point, Kurt remained calm and respectful with his next attempt. "Take him for a psychological evaluation." Simple as that. The officer's response was noticeably skeptical when he argued the boy would need to meet certain criteria. Honestly, it sounded like his mind was already made up about the whole case. Trevor's mother made her own attempt to instill a sense of urgency by reminding them once again of her son's manic behavior, but the officers didn't care about her opinion. They wanted to know if he was diagnosed with anything. The family still didn't give up, They begged the officers to perform psychiatric emergency response team duties, commonly known as PERT, or PERT. This would have required the police to speak with Trevor in order to assess his mental state and proceed as necessary, regardless whether that meant referring them to a treatment center or transporting him to one personally. Frustrated at the process, Mary stepped in to reinforce her opinion. "He should be held on a 5150," she said. "He's a danger to himself and to others." One officer seemed a bit flustered by her assertion and snapped back with, "How is that?" before catching his mistake. His tone becomes progressively lighter in his immediate follow-up as he tries to correct course with, "Are you a psychiatrist?" No, she wasn't, nor had she ever seen him in a professional setting, and that was all they needed to hear to justify their decision. The fact that she was a board-certified psychiatrist and family friend had no bearing on the situation. Instead of detaining Trevor, they suggested his mother stay out of the house until she was able to formally evict him with a civil restraining order, which would take roughly 4 weeks. Taken aback by their reluctance to even speak with the boy, Kurt and Dr. Russia agreed to enter Trevor's bedroom themselves. He immediately began screaming and making incomprehensible noises with his mouth hanging wide open before lunging at the door. Do you think that that had any effect on the officers' opinions? It didn't. They still refused to act since Trevor had not committed a confirmed crime. In the end, Trevor agreed to go to the hospital with his father later that day, and the officers left without taking any action whatsoever. I'm sorry to say, he never made it to that hospital. Three people could be alive right now had the Heitmans been taken seriously. This is what makes their tragedy so much more painful to hear about. How often do friends and family miss key warning signs or do nothing about them at all? This family saw the signs. They had a psychologist next door trying to take action. This family told the police everything. They didn't try to hide their son's behavior or make excuses. They stood up and said, "We need help." And they didn't get it. At approximately 4:15 p.m., Trevor stormed through the house, informed his parents that he needed to go, and got into his McLaren. Kurt's SUV proved no obstacle for him, and less than 10 minutes later, the sleek sports car was plowing through Ashley Falls Elementary School's fence. Trevor raced around the parking lot before exiting the vehicle and breaking a window. Staff members attempted to confront him as he returned to his car, but he simply cursed them out before speeding a short distance away. Though school was already out for summer break, children can still be seen running away in a witness's recorded footage. Trevor didn't go far before circling back, and the woman filming shouts for the kids to hide. As more staff arrive to assess the situation, Trevor rams his way through the school's gate, then leaves. Only 15 minutes later, he would reach the southbound I-5 freeway, where he was involved in a hit-and-run. Fortunately, this accident didn't cause any serious injuries, but it was a terrifying preview of what was to come next. Police dispatch logs confirm Kurt called 911 at 4:31 to warn them that Trevor had left the house in a manic state, hitting his SUV in the process, and once again did his best to convey the gravity of the situation. Unfortunately, it was already too late. Only a few short minutes later, Trevor would travel the wrong way up an 805 exit ramp with no visibility. The McLaren's speed topped 100 miles per hour as it barreled past oncoming traffic to approach Junction 27A. Then, it happened. At 4:36, Trevor collided head-on with a Hyundai SUV carrying a mother and her daughter. All three parties died instantly in a fiery blaze. The impact caused Trevor's seatbelt to cut through his torso, and several body parts were thrown onto the freeway. Reports of the wrong-way driver were all over the news as they waited for the investigation results. Don't forget, the world had no clue Trevor Heitman was actually Mick Skillet, but they were about to find out in the worst way possible. No one can hear the Pizarro family's story without their heart instantly breaking. Eileen was a family therapist who specialized in helping children from abused homes. She was training to become a licensed therapist at the time of the crash. Her 12-year-old daughter, Ariana, was the youngest of three and only a few days away from starting the seventh grade. She was also a gifted singer, but her chance at a career was taken away before it could even begin. It was the oldest son, Angelo, who first received the terrible news. The three siblings were raised by their mother and grandfather, but now it fell on Angelo's shoulders to tell the rest of his family they would never see their girls again. The younger son, Dominic, spoke lovingly of Eileen and Ariana in an interview with ABC News, saying they were both full of life and the most caring people in the world. Dwayne "The Rock" Johnson even recorded a message of well wishes to her family after receiving thousands of tweets showing Eileen's love for him. Obviously, those wonderful traits applied to Dominic as well. While the rest of the world was ready to condemn the driver of the sports car, the victim's own son believed the driver could not have been in his right mind. When Trevor was later revealed to be Mick Skillet, many of his former fans blamed his actions on the fact that he lost his website, and the floodgates of hatred burst open. Social media was overrun with posts showing the public's outrage and disgust. No one was taking a step back to look at the evidence. His autopsy confirmed that there were no drugs or alcohol in his system, nor was there a suicide note. But the medical examiners ultimately suggested that he may have been suffering from mania. Go figure. This case quickly turned into an epic legal battle. The city blames Trevor's parents, as they obviously blame the city, and the Pizarro family filed lawsuits against both parties. Ultimately, the crash was ruled an accident, which obviously infuriated a lot of people. Many believe it should be considered second-degree murder or manslaughter, but it's impossible to prove whether there was actual malice or mere confusion behind Trevor's actions. There's no question it was a horrible tragedy, and nothing will ever make up for the loss suffered by those affected, but I don't believe the Trevor in those early videos was the same Trevor behind the wheel that day. There are still so many things that we don't know about the human mind, and since the San Diego Police Department failed to perform their duties on the morning of August 23rd, 2018, there are too many questions that we can never have answered. What do you think? Do you agree that the Pizarro family deserves all the support in the world? Do you think Mick Skillet's parents deserve to grieve in peace? Let us know in the comments. We'd like to end this with a special thanks to Coffeehouse Crime and TDM Jesus. They both did an amazing analysis of this case, and their videos and research were a great help in the creation of this episode of The Dark Side of Gaming. This episode of The Dark Side of Gaming was brought to you by The Dark Swamp Entertainment and produced by Swamp Dweller, backed by Audio Boom. The heart-pounding sound design was produced by Joey Sorlis. The creepy mysteries in this episode were brought together by Paige Turner. These dark tales were voiced and hosted by Derek Weber. Be sure to follow the podcast on iTunes and Spotify to get notified as soon as new episodes come out. And don't forget to rate it to let us know how we did. And leave a comment on what you would like to hear be covered in a future episode.